We're ready whenever you are.
Okay. So what does LaRouche obsolesce?
Carotene.
Carotene. And what does he retrieve?
Herbert Armstrong.
And he flips into?
Peter Beater.
Peter Beater. All right. Garrett Dean, and when I say personal, a lot of people would understand that by what's your mentor. People say, well, so-and-so was my mentor. That's partly getting into the personal division, part nine of our 10 holy offices. LaRouche obsolesces Garrett Dean because maybe I won't go into that now until I talk about Garrett. It's just that LaRouche is not that interested in personal. The dialectician would not be concerned too much about the personal relationship with somebody. They're just interested in what their abilities of thinking and producing and being competent thinkers. You know what I mean? It's like another part of being indifferent to whether they clothes, what kind of clothes they wear, what race, creed, whether they have bad breath or not. And that would include any personal interaction with them. They're almost like, you know, efficient experts, efficient addicts, efficiency addicts. Let's get this done. We gotta do this. We got goals. We gotta get better technological environments. Okay, so now we flip into Beater. We went back to this, to Herbert and LaRouche, and now we're doing astronomy, right? Let's look at astronomy and why Dr. Beater. Well, traditional astronomy looks at the skies. Dr. Beater, he updates astronomy because when you start looking at the skies, according to Beater, you look for particle beam weapons on the moon. You look for Russian cosmospheres. You look for things in space that are man-made that nobody knows are up there. All right? This is what Beater talked about in the 70s and early 80s, about the incredible progression of the Russian space program. They had militaristic vehicles called cosmospheres. They knocked out the moon base that the Rockefeller set up there on September 27th, 1977, and they took over the moon. And it was, you're looking at, when you look through the telescope, you'd be looking for Russian cosmospheres rather than looking for the latest galaxy or asteroid coming to nuke the Earth, right? So Beater, that was partly tongue-in-cheek that I have Beater, he is updating astronomy because he gets you to look at man-made artifacts in the immediate atmosphere around the Earth, not just first nature galaxies and stars and planets and stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what is Beater obsolesce?
Mabe Russell.
Yes. Mabe Russell would, I think I'll go back into that when we get to Mabe Russell, but yes, and he retrieves...
Cosmic awareness.
Yes, cosmic awareness was the only information network that promoted Dr. Beater. They even claim that cosmic awareness in its channelings discussed the validity of Dr. Beater's material. So cosmic awareness was one of the best promoters of the obscure Dr. Beater.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, no, I mean, Paul Shockley, who just died in May,
right.
The third channel for cosmic awareness,
uh-huh.
The first one being Ralph Doobie in the early 60s, he died in January 67. The second channel, Dave Worster from summer of 67 till August 74, was the second channel of cosmic awareness, and then Paul Shockley from 75 to 95, let's say. He's the one who went into trance, and his associates asked cosmic awareness questions about Dr. Beater, whether it was true or not, and cosmic awareness supported it. And that was one of the only information outlets that talked about Beater. Beater was very obscure, even though he was known on Wall Street and the corporate level, but the average citizen out there never heard of Beater. Not too much. Okay, so that what does Beater flip into when pushed to extreme?
Mm-hmm.
What does he flip
Garrett
into?
Garrett Dean.
He flips into Garrett Dean.
Yes.
Okay, well, we'll come back to that. So then the next one is...
Arithmetic.
That's Mabe Russell.
Yes.
Now, Mabe Russell would read newspapers. Dr. Beater didn't read newspapers. He had inside information on the people behind the scenes who would never be in the papers. You know, the solar government kind of people that no one even knows about.
People would call him and tell him, you know, what was going down.
they would come and meet him. I mean, yeah, he had his own sources because he was part of that establishment in intelligence work himself. And then he became a critic of it. And so his intelligence sources, he first began in being the public deep beater that I'm talking about. I mean, Dr. Beter was a famous lawyer in Washington. He was very important in bringing the Japanese into the American economy because he recommended that the Export-Import Bank allow the Japanese to be involved with American business. And it was only his intervention that made that possible. I won't go into the details of that right now, but he then ran for governor of West Virginia in 1967, but the corruption forced him out to be an independent. He then went to the Congo in 68 to be an advisor on mining and gold stuff. And while he was in the Congo, in Congo or Zaire, in 1971-72, British intelligence came to him. And you actually can see the diary excerpt on Android Memes of Anachrony, where Beter's telling me about how they came to him. They came to him and told him about what was going on after Watergate. This was during the Watergate crisis, 72-73, when Nixon was being Watergated. And they told him what was happening behind the scenes, and told him there was no, I think they told him there was no gold in Fort Knox. So he came back and put out a book in 1973 called The Conspiracy Against the Dollar. And that would get published by a regular New York publisher and circulate around. People reviewed it. And then he started going into the more secret stuff. And that wouldn't get published, so he made a tape series starting in 1975, an audio letter every month. You'd get a letter and he'd give you the update based on his various secret sources. So, why am I talking about Beter? So Mae Brussel. Now, Mae Brussel didn't have access to intelligence world. She was not employed in that world. She's just an average American who read the newspapers. So she would look at what happened to names from the news in the papers and look up documents and research what these people were doing and where they led to. So it was like the best pattern recognition, Mae provided the best pattern recognition of someone reading 10 newspapers a day, diligently reading books as they came out and reports, all kinds of documents. She would be adding up where the bodies were buried. She'd add up who got killed, who got knocked off, who didn't, and why. And in terms of what I would call figures, as McLuhan deals with the ground, the rhetorical ground, Mae dealt with the figures, the people who apparently were observable in the newscape as in the news landscape as operatives and important people. So I call that arithmetic, and it's not number arithmetic. It is media arithmetic because you're looking at the content, deciding what figures are influencing what other figures. So it was a mediated or virtual reality kind of arithmetic. So that's Mae Brussel, right? So who does Mae Brussel obsolesce?
Herbert Armstrong.
Yes. That would be similar to Beter's reasons. Because Mae Brussel knew that the fundamentalists, according to her information, were propped up by the old Galen Nazi network. The Galen post-World War II Nazi network that operated through Otto von Bolschwing in the United States after Galen went back to Germany, and what Mae calls the Fourth Reich, that they were overlapped with the fundamentalists. So similarly, she says, if you believe Mae, you wouldn't take any of the fundamentalists, including Herbert Armstrong, seriously. They were just dupes of a master plan by the Fourth Reich.
Okay.
And who does... What?
I said okay.
Who's Mae retrieve?
Guillotine.
I would say that Mae was a person you'd call up and talk and get to know personally and become a good friend of if you liked her. In some ways, she was like Garrett for me, a really good friend and really fun to be with and talk to. So that's how she's sort of like. She's not a Garrettine. She's not my personal mentor, but she resonates on a personal level like Garrett was for me.
Mm-hmm.
And then what does Mae Brussel flip into?
Finnegan's Wake.
Right, which is another way of flipping from figure analysis into ground analysis. But rather than flipping into McLuhan, it flips into the book, Finnegan's Wake, because Mae analyzed newspapers. She was a literate person and pushed the literate means of understanding what was going on in the news world as an extension of our visual sense. So it was a visually biased approach. And the counter to that arithmetic is Finnings Wake, which is a blur and collage of information which makes fun of trying to figure out the arithmetic of the situation, trying to figure out who's the figure. Finnings Wake explains why it would be pretty hard for Mae Russell to successfully establish who the figures were because of the information environment. So that is why instead of putting McLuhan in, we put in Finnings Wake, since Finnings Wake is a book. And McLuhan wrote books, but he dealt with the modern media environments in other media forms, whereas Finnings Wake, written by Joyce, is just a book about the electric effect on the book world. So that's why Mae flips into Finnings Wake. Then the next, was that number seven? Was that number six?
Six. We're on seven now.
And so what's seven? That would be...
Geometry.
Oh, what?
Geometry.
Oh, so that's Finnings Wake.
Yes.
And so it obsolesces...
Peter Beter.
Right, and retrieves...
Marshall McLuhan.
Well, the retrieval of McLuhan is obvious, and McLuhan resonates and used Finnings Wake as a guide in his own media study. And what does Finnings Wake flip into?
Cosmic awareness.
Right. Finnings Wake, in a lot of ways, made fun of the Gnostic cults and esoteric secret religious Eastern fascination, Eastern and non-Catholic interest. A lot of that was made fun of by Joyce in Finnings Wake, which was the theosophical stuff, all that occult interest. At the end of the 1800s and early part of the 1900s, are a big factor in Joyce's work. Now, cosmic awareness is the occult. Cosmic awareness comes out of the Madame Blavatsky tradition. So you move from the non-occult Finnings Wake, non-pro-occult Finnings Wake, into the occult. Now, personally, Joyce did go to mediums, and that was his personal level, and he was a quadriphenic and... like Club 22, explored all elements, but basically Finnings Wake is seen as an extension of James Joyce's Thomist leanings in philosophy, or the influence of Thomas Aquinas and the Catholic thinkers and his Jesuit training. I wouldn't limit Joyce to that, but to be something that's quite far from that Thomistic world, we bring in cosmic awareness. So that's why he flips into cosmic awareness. And I said he obsolesces, and Finnings Wake obsolesces what?
Peter Beter.
That would be that the idea that certain elites control society, or secret intelligence agencies control society, as Beter analyzed and understood that they did control, and making nations and cities and citizens puppets, Joyce made fun of that view. Wyndham Lewis was similar to Beter's view, and James Joyce made fun of Lewis in Finnings Wake. So it's basically Joyce and Finnings Wake are taking a bottom-up view and not emphasizing the top-down like Mae Russell and Beter do, and LaRouche to an extent. The LaRouche emphasizes the top-down in terms of the quality of ideas. He thinks ideas is what develops a mature civilization or an immature civilization. And people are involved in propagating those ideas, but it's the quality of the ideas. They have to be platonic and not sophist. Well, Mae Russell and Beter more onto not dealing with the idea, just dealing with power-hungry figures who just want to control the bureaucracies. And Joyce makes fun of that in Finnings Wake. So that's why Joyce obsolesces Beter. You could have put in Mae Russell, but... I had to have each holy office show up in different positions among all the different tetrads, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so then that was number seven. So number eight is the occult, right?
Yes.
So
yeah.
Cosmic awareness, what does it obsolesce?
McLuhan.
Yeah. And it retrieves?
Beter.
Yeah. And it flips into?
Zappa.
Okay. So cosmic awareness, representing the occult and being the phenomenon of channeling, it obsolesces McLuhan, because if you really are into cosmic awareness and you don't want to support McLuhan, you would, as a result of studying cosmic awareness, realize that the Catholic sensibility of McLuhan, even though it was a unique Catholic sensibility and not limited to just being a Catholic, as most people understand being a Catholic, it would emphasize the forces of spirit, the forces of the etheric bodies, like the world of non-sensual reality. And McLuhan emphasizes the senses. McLuhan personally could look into mediumship, but when he publicly presented his information, it was based on the models of the senses, the five senses, where cosmic awareness tells us that there are other senses, the subtle bodies, the astral bodies. That McLuhan did not analyze the public newscape or technological landscape. He did not analyze it using the model of subtle bodies and astral bodies, like William Irwin Thompson does. He's like cosmic awareness. So that's why emphasizing the subtle bodies, the occult world, definitely McLuhan as a Catholic would not advocate that, though he did study the occult as means of understanding how technologies affect our senses, because he said the artists and secret societies and people who explored their senses, often considered immorally or excessively, they did have an understanding of the senses, and you need to understand that sensory knowledge to understand the sensory effects of new media environments. So that's the degree McLuhan would use him, but he generally didn't think you definitely wouldn't use it as salvation, use the occult as salvation. Now, cosmic awareness kind of implies, like any Gnostic philosophy, that you could activate the divine spark and get salvation by going into your other subtle bodies and getting to a place of what awareness called the plane of essence, or higher ecstatic states or nirvanic states. So that is how McLuhan is a different world and obsolescence if you emphasize cosmic awareness. And cosmic awareness retrieves Beter because Beter promoted cosmic Beter was promoted by cosmic awareness, and Beter himself used to tell people they should check out cosmic awareness. He didn't do it on a big scale, but he was a friend of the cosmic awareness organization and would read their newsletters and hand them out to other people. So there was a resonance between Beter and cosmic awareness. Now, part of the reason is that Beter himself studied swamis, some swami up in Boston in the 60s. He got interested in Eastern Hindu stuff and yoga and Eastern mysticism. So that is, cosmic awareness talks a lot about Eastern mysticism. And Beter was resonant with them in that way. They had similar interests. And then cosmic awareness flips into, what was the opposite of cosmic awareness?
McLuhan.
It obsolesced McLuhan.
What does it flip into? Zappa.
Rhythm. Yeah. Now, Zappa, Frank Zappa, you know, in his song Cosmic Debris, I think it is, and Excentrical, no, it's Cosmic Debris, he makes fun of gurus. Now, Zappa himself always made fun of people's infatuation with yoga and Eastern mysticism and the occult. He didn't think people should take those things seriously. So Zappa is the opposite of cosmic awareness. Mm-hmm. Even though I have cosmic awareness do a reading on Zappa, and they did a very good interpretation of Zappa's music and methods and approach, and I showed it once to David Wally, the first biographer of Zappa, and he said, yeah, this cosmic awareness entity, whatever it is, they describe Zappa in a pretty accurate way. So that would have been ironic for Zappa to know that. I don't know if I ever brought it up to him. Maybe I did, but basically in public. I mean, if you look at the interview with Zappa done by Bob Marshall, he says in there that when an interviewer asked him about the psychic world, he said, no comment. And so Bob Marshall asked him, does that mean you're not interested in the psychic world, blah, blah, blah? And he said, no, it means that if I'm going to talk about the psychic world, I'm going to do it with someone who has a good understanding of it. And you're not going to find those kind of people in rock journalism. So they asked me about the psychic world. I basically don't want to discuss it with them, so I say no comment. So Zappa did have an interest in other stuff, but I don't know how much he would go into it seriously. He's too busy making music.
I don't recall that part in the recording.
Yeah, I know it's in there. Well, there's no full recording of the Zappa thing. If there is a recording out there, it's not complete.
What do I have?
Well, someone recorded. All I know is that Greg Duffel, who runs the International Connection, he taped most of it, but that one day he couldn't. His father was supposed to do it. His father screwed up, so he didn't get it all. And he was one trying to get it all, and he didn't. And I don't know if there's anybody else who got it. Maybe if Jerry Fialka has a copy, or and he lent it to somebody and they dubbed it, I don't know. There may be a full copy out there, but I don't know of it. So I would assume if you have an audio of the Bob Marshall interview, you don't have everything. And so
it's very long, whatever it is.
Yeah, well, just look up, go online and read the transcript. You'll find it in there.
Wasn't that transcribed from a full audio recording?
Yeah, that was done by Carolyn's secretary.
So then somebody has the full audio recording. Or was I there, like, doing shorthand? And
No, I have the full recording.
Oh, you do? So it does exist.
Yeah, and so does Zappa. Zappa was going to make an album out of it.
Yeah.
But he got involved with Russia. That would be, the interview was in the fall of October 88, and by January 89, he got so involved with Russia that he formed a company and became a business consultant and sort of dropped his recording projects or any new things. Definitely the Bob Marshall thing was not pursued. He did think it was really a great interview and wanted to put it out on an album. And so he has a copy, so I don't know what his family's done with it, but we have a copy, and some people have fragments. But the whole thing was transcribed, and so if you read the transcript, you'll get everything.
Right. I should hold the two side by side and see what's missing then.
Yeah. Okay, so Zappa, he can, in a way, Zappa said he used the sensory effects of music as an occult, magical, hypnotic phenomenon. I mean, he lists in Freakout, one of his influences is the hypnotist. Now, I don't know who the hypnotist is. It could be even a local hippie who had that as a slang name. But the idea of using music to hypnotize people is spelled out in Zappa's article for Life magazine in about end of June 1968. He did a long article on the rock scene, and he ended with the story of people dancing in a disco and really getting off of the music. And he asked rhetorically the reader, if you were this person dancing in the disco and somebody came up and tapped you on the shoulder and asked you this question, the question being, would a society that needs all the friends that it can get use a force this powerful? And Zappa ends the article, would you listen? Would you listen to this person who was interrupting your dancing and asking you to consider how a society that needs all the friends that it can get? Now, would that be Zappa's friend, the United Mutations group, friendship group he formed? Is that what he means by society needs all the friends that he can get? Or does he mean Lyndon Baines Johnson, the presidential American Pentagon and public administration, Congress, American political authorities? Does he mean that is the society that needs all the friends that it can get? So he can take it either way. So he was suggesting that the drug music was used, like LaRouche said, same thing as LaRouche. He was posing the question, this stuff is used to make people pretty stupid and tolerate a society that shouldn't have a lot of friends. So, and that's slightly like McLuhan, he's talking about the rhetorical effects. So there's the hypnotic effect of external sensory life, and music is a supplement to that. And that is the opposite of being concerned about invisible hypnotic forces like Rai E, Eloi II, and Lofty, which are the occult, hidden behind the scenes occult forces that set up this dimension, according to cosmic awareness, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right, so that's the eighth holy office. Now, Garrett is the personal, my personal mentor and friend, and as someone once said to me, so-and-so, I got my baptism from them. So I got my baptism from Garrett. Just meeting him in the 50s was such an interesting experience. He was such a charismatic actor and person that I'm sure he had an effect on me since I was in my 30s then. I was young, and I had not had much interaction with North America, and so he was a great guy to learn a lot about New York culture, since he had spent most of his life in New York City in theater. So, what does Garrett obsolesce?
Cosmic awareness.
Yeah, and he retrieves.
Sagan's awake.
And he flips into.
Herbert Armstrong.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so for most people, Garrett was a blatant out-and-out pagan. He was bisexual, maybe tended more towards the gay side, though you couldn't tell. He was flamboyant. He was a dandy like Oscar Wilde and those kind of 19th century figures.
Yeah.
But he was interested in the occult. He also was a good thinker. He wrote poetry, great talker, great friend. He was a one-man Salvation Army, used to help desperate people all the time, have them stay at his house for free. So he was he'd be in the model of a wild saint. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Not a Christian saint, but a good guy who helped people, inspired them, but a pagan. So a wild pagan saint. He's almost like a shaman, but not technically a shaman. But a modern version of a possessed, inspired person.
I get your drift.
So he obsolesces cosmic awareness because cosmic awareness presents the idea, well, you study their meditation techniques and occult rituals, then you'll have enlightenment. Well, if you meet Garrett, you can get enlightenment, you know, without going through the mystical stuff. It may not be complete enlightenment, but it's a different kind of enlightenment. It's an one-on-one enlightenment, whereas the cosmic awareness talks about enlightenment comes through access to other dimensions, right? Other realms, not just this realm. Though it would celebrate this realm too, cosmic awareness would. But you need to enhance your sense of what you're made up of. So when I talk about we have an astral body, that's the cosmic awareness zone. So Garrett Obsoles is the inspiration that cosmic awareness does, or he's a different version of that. He retrieves. What did Garrett retrieve?
Fans awake.
Oh, Fans awake. Yeah. Well, if you ever heard, we have a Garrett on tape. I mean, Garrett. If you think of the oral culture part, the content of Fans awake is this endless speech, multilingual speech, and we have a tape of Joyce doing it. But if you think of Fans awake as amazing music of speech, well, that's what Garrett could do. He could. He'd get on the phone, and he'd be talking to you on the phone, and people across the room, way across the room, could hear him coming through the phone, even though I'm listening to him with the device up to my ear, and it's not so loud that I have to move it away. He had such a great projection that somehow it could come through, you'd hear it comfortably, but people across the room could hear it. You know what I mean? Coming out of the mouthpiece, or the earpiece of the phone. So Garrett had this amazing ability with his mouth, and interesting, he ended up living in Dartmouth. He's the darting mouth. So to the extent that Fins Wake has speech as its content, all kinds of multi-level speech, Garrett in person would give you that effect of Fins Wake. You know what I mean?
Okay.
So he's resonant with Fins Wake, and a great improviser in speech. He's not like Lord Buckley almost. You ever heard of the comedian Lord Buckley?
No, I'm not familiar with him.
Yeah, very famous jazz beatnik comedian. Yeah, you got to look him up and go on the web and hear his stuff. You probably find it pretty interesting. Zappa released some albums of him, but he was a big influence on Lenny Bruce and everybody in back in the 40s and 50s. A legendary, amazing ranter, Lord Buckley. You definitely look into that. And that's Buckley.
Okay, I made a note.
Yeah, and okay, so Garrett Fins Wake resonates with Garrett. And the opposite of Garrett is Herbert W. Armstrong, because you're going into fundamentalist Christianity, where it's almost Calvinist and Puritan. You're a cautious person. You're reticent. You hold your thoughts to yourself. You know, you're not very expressive, tight-lipped almost. You're socially decent and respectable. Well, Garrett wasn't like that. So Herbert Armstrong and the fundamentalist ethos is the exact opposite of Garrett. Though Garrett was such a neat guy, in the later years of his life, I drop in and he'd be listening to Herbert Armstrong on the radio. So I thought, well, if Garrett can listen to Herbert, then Herbert's pretty good, because Garrett didn't like fundamentalist Christians, but he would listen to Herbert and he'd say, you know, it's interesting listening to this guy. So that was a factor in picking Herbert Armstrong. I thought if a blatant pagan like Garrett could listen to Herbert, then Herbert ain't your normal ridiculous fundamentalist broadcaster. You know what I mean?
I see, yes.
So, but what Garrett stood for, what Herbert Armstrong stood for is the opposite of Garrett in many ways. Okay, so then we come to the final Holy Office, Club 22, which is the place I lived at in Toronto, but it also was whatever media I had access to. So, Bob Marshall being a puppet of me, he was an extension of Club 22. Then in 87, and Bob Marshall was from 84 to 89, say, but in 87 I get on Mike Dyer's show, so I had an extension of, I had a media extension from my home through CKLN, and so you would hear us talk about 22 in some of the shows, right? You've heard some of the CKLN rebroadcasts, right?
Yes, I'm familiar with what you're talking about.
Yeah, and you'll hear a reference to 22 in Club 22, so mm-hmm. That was Mike Dyer and insiders of the show, knowing that was what my home base was. So Club 22 is in the unique position of knowing all these excellent representatives of the various holy offices and how they update the holy office. That's one thing about Garrett, back to him for a minute. He updated personal interaction. He had a way of interacting with people which was totally unique. It might be the way some people are gurus, but no one was a guru like Garrett. I mean, he didn't. If anybody came into his home or encountered him, he would find out something about them. Let's say they look stupid, or just they have some cliche, stereotypical design in their body or their dress and that, and it just stuck out like a sore thumb. Well, Garrett would take that, and he would turn that into a great asset. He'd talk to the person about however they looked, and make what, if they looked like a dumb door, he'd say, it's really great the way you... you look like a dumb door. The way you use that, you're very seductive. It's very seductive to do it that way. In other words, he probably considered everybody as an actor, and whatever they look like was their costume. And he would celebrate or critique how they presented their costume. But he never put anybody down for whatever, if say someone was overweight, he'd celebrate their overweightness. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So he never promoted. He never wanted to make anybody feel inadequate. So today we have nothing but gurus on the airwaves or in media telling everybody they're inferior or they need to improve themselves, and they're wrecks and they're poor excuses of humanity and they got to improve themselves. Well, Garrett didn't take that view. He could improve people by reverse psychology, make them feel better about themselves. So that's what's unique about Garrett as a personal, in the field of being a personal mentor, personal inspiration. He was unique at it, had a unique way of doing it, and glad to have a lot of that on tape because you can hear him doing it. It's pretty neat.